different countries.
On that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Isabel Allende's new book is called Island Beneath the Sea. She's touring the country in New York tonight and then on to Philadelphia and beyond. I'm Amy Goodman with Anjali Kamat. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Wild Orphans, your community weekly community arts program on CFUV. My name is Brian, and I am your host for today. Of course, you're listening to CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, 104.3 on cable, and we stream live at cfuv.uvic.ca, so you can tune into us just about anywhere in the world. And my guest today is local artist Wendy Welch, who in 2004 was the founder, and she's the current director and one of the instructors at the Vancouver Island School of Art on Quadra Street. Immediately south of the Quadra Street Village in an old public school, which we'll hear more about, I hope. It's a great little building. Wendy has her Master of Fine Arts degree from here, the University of Victoria, and before that a BFA with distinction in studio arts from Concordia University in Montreal. So, Wendy, welcome to Wild Orphans and to CFUV.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for coming in on this blustery day. If you haven't tied things down out there, and we'll get a full weather report, but they are still showing the wind warning in effect. And so be careful out there for flying objects. Now, I first heard Wendy speak a few weeks ago at the opening night reception for the 9th annual Fairfield Artists Studio Tour, FAST for short. And you told a delightful story about getting this art school started in 2004, which I must say took and takes guts, I think, both to get it started. And you told this delightful story about, as everyone does who wants to open a business, encountering bankers.
Right.
Can you take us just through that? Just
sure.
I just want to explore that a bit, how someone has the gumption to start an art school.
Okay, well, one of the things I was talking about is the different values art has. And then to go back a little bit, when I did decide to open the art school and dealing with different people, business people, bankers, they would always say, well, you know, I'm surprised you know about business because, you know, you're an artist. But truthfully, most of the artists I know are really good business people. And I don't think it's actually that separate. So, but sometimes thinking about the value of art, artists don't really realize the true value either. So when I went to the bank to get a line of credit to start the school, the banker was asking me, well, what do you have? What is your net worth? And I said, well, I'm not sure. I don't own a car. I don't have a house. So obviously I have no net worth. And she said, well, just try and think about that a little more. You must have something. And I thought, well, I have a lot of books, but that's not really worth that much. And then I realized, well, I have a lot of art. I buy art and I have a lot of my own art. And so I said to her, well, what about art? And she said, sure, of course, art has a value. And so based on the art I own, including my own inventory, they gave me a line of credit to start the school. So I thought, well, that's really bodes well. This is a promising start that I can start this business without having any capital except the capital of art. So it made sense. And the whole reason I started a school is I'm actually not sure how it started, but I know one day a professor at UVic sent me an email saying there was a studio space available, and I went to see the studio space. It was so beautiful, but too expensive for me to have on my own. So I thought, well, I'll start a school. And I always loved teaching. I love teaching. I remember when I was six, I used to teach the kids in the neighborhood, 6, 7, 8, and I would invite them over to my back stairs, and I actually would give them homework. So it's just something I thought, well, start a school. It's what I did when I was a kid. I'll try it as an adult.
How different can it be? Yeah.
That's right. So that's basically, I saw the studio space and I thought, well, one thing led into the other. I had been teaching at Victoria College of Art for about 8 years. So I had some sense of, you know, what it's like running a private post-secondary school. So I wasn't going in it completely naive. And I had run a business in Victoria called Art Adventures, where we went to different parks around the city each weekend. So
we'll come back to that. Let's go. Yeah. So you saw the studio space. You said, that's just one person. So, but that's a big step from there to, gee, I think I'll try and take over that school on Quadra Street. Take us through some of those early steps. This is what, 2003?
2004. I had just finished my MFA at UVic, and I thought, well, it is a kind of monumental thing to finish a master's degree. So I either am going to move to Winnipeg or do something big, start a school. So I thought, well, I'll try and start the school. So I had this one room. The rent was really good and it was on John Street. So I just sent out emails to all the people I knew, and I went to a graphic design company in the end of July, because I made a logo and I knew the colors I wanted to use. So I went to the graphic design company because one of my students had work there, and she put in a good word for me that I wasn't completely off my head. And so the woman I talked to said, you want to start this next September, not the one coming. I said, no, in a month and a half, I'd like to start the school. And so because the person who worked there knew I was someone who would follow my word, she decided, okay, let's help Wendy get all these brochures ready. So we started the school with 47 students in this one room. And by the winter semester, we needed more space. So one of our instructors let us use his studio, which is on Balmoral Street, and we call that our downtown campus.
Let me just stop for a second. I think to go from zero to 47 students is incredible. How does, and we'll take this through just a little bit of a step at a time, but how did you promote it even?
Well, as I said, I had taught in Victoria for quite a few years, and one of the things was I had got, before I did my MFA at UVic, I had worked at UVic in the continuing studies department. I taught there, but I also worked as a registration clerk. Mm-hmm. And I found it really challenging to have a day job. And I made a deal with myself that I'm only going to make my living doing something that's art related. So then I was determined to get as many teaching jobs as I could. So I taught everywhere at the Y, every rec center, Camosun. So by then I had a certain amount of notoriety in the city.
The Rolodex is quite big by that
that's
point.
That's right. So people knew me, and I felt confident that I could get enough students to start this going. But I thought I would just keep it small, you know, because low overhead. But it started to get to the sense where, well, we needed more space. So there was this empty building on Quadra, and I went to it. Luminara was using it, so I went and checked it out, and it was so beautiful. It was like a real school with blackboards and parking. At John Street, there was only street parking, and we used to have a parking break where people would have to move their cars. And I used to say, well, it's just a nice way for people to get to know each other and things like that. So this building was great. And, you know, when we first called the school board, people kept saying no to us. And I always think that if people say no really fast, they don't really mean it. So that I thought, well, I'll pursue this a little further. And we contacted all the school board trustees, and they really came to bat for us because I gave them a proposal, what we're planning to do with the space. And then we've been there since 2005.
And I think at an era when schools were actually thinking of selling off some of their properties, which don't get me going on that, which I think is just a tragedy, but I think this, in a sense, perpetuates the use. It's still an educational, plus it's not being torn down. It still looks like a school, which it is.
That's right. And there's not too many other things it could be used for. And it's a heritage building, so I don't know about whether it can be torn down. So it seems like a perfect use for it. And, I mean, right now we have about 300 part-time students, so we're almost outgrowing that space, but I think it's such a good location, and we really feel we're part of the Quadra Village. And one of my philosophies, again, back to maybe why I started a school, is I wanted to make a place where everybody could study art, because I really believe in that idea. And as I mentioned when I was doing my talk at the Fairfield studio tour, that I always thought that art was something that everyone did. I didn't think it was a course you took. And I, when I meet people or people phone the school and they say, you know, I really want to take an art course, but I don't have any talent, I always think that thought shouldn't be there. People should just take an art class, and I don't even believe talent exists. I think that some people have more desire or more passion, but I think everyone can do art. So I wanted to have a school where people would feel that they can just walk in and take an art course, even if they don't want to do studio art. They can take an art course and like an art history course or understanding art, or just to kind of develop a sense of visual literacy, because art is there for everyone, either to look at it or to make it. It's part of our world. It's how we understand the world.
And yet you took the school and you moved from a small one-room studio with just your own students. Suddenly you became, I presume, a hirer of other teachers.
Right.
And you've become a nonprofit.
Yeah, and we're...
Those are all significant steps.
That's right. And we're also accredited with the Private Career Training Institutions Agency. And so that means we're allowed to offer programs, and students can come on a loan. And how I do all this is I just think about when my mom would tell me about cleaning my room and I didn't want to clean my room, and she would say, just pick up one thing, and then I'd pick up one thing, and then I'd notice I could pick up the next thing. And so it's just this idea of doing one thing. So I never think, oh, I have all these hundreds of things to do. I think, well, today I have these three things I have to do today. I have, you know, this grant to apply for, or have to do this, contact the accreditation people. So it's always just about doing one thing. And it's actually quite related to my own practice as an artist. I do large scale installations, but because of the nature of my time and the fact I don't have a huge studio space, I have to do things in components. Mm-hmm. So I make small components and then I bring them to a gallery space and make a large installation. So it's just breaking things down. It's kind of, it's almost a philosophy of life, you know, just not so much living in the now, but just to kind of see things being made up of components works really well in terms of running the school and dealing with all the things, such as, you know, hiring instructors and just all the hundreds of details that go involved, like deciding what courses to teach, how to promote them. And I also run a nonprofit gallery in the school called the Sideroom Gallery. So that's a whole other board of directors. And
well, that's a separate.
It's board. A separate.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you work. And that's a question I have. Again, you went from being an independent to suddenly now you work for, I was going to say one board, but it's two boards.
Right.
Who oversee Wendy Welch.
That's right. And that's an interesting challenge, too, because it's a different set of rules when you're running your own business. And then you're right now, since we're a nonprofit with the board, I'm answerable to the board. So we kind of work together on that. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I do have a certain amount of freedom to do what I like, but, you know, it is, you have to always present your ideas. And it's actually really good. I mean, it works out better than being on your own, because you feel that you have a kind of support system that they can help you through different challenges. So, for example, with this kind of economic slowdown, our registrations decreased, but our bottom line stayed the same, because I just switched things around so that offering less courses, but having more people in courses. So it's always being creative. And that's why I think like artists are good business people because you're able to think about different ways. So rather than think, okay, this isn't working, or panic, you just think, okay, well, I have the structure. How do I keep switching it around? And one of the things that I do at the school, or we all do, is make it very student focused. So find out what courses do students want to take, and then offer those courses, and then it works out. So we always are listening to, in a sense, what the market demands.
And we're talking visual arts here.
That's right.
Not written arts and or music. We're talking painting and sculpture and
photography. We're getting a little bit into video and film, and I'm interested also in incorporating writing at some point.
So I was going to throw that in, as someone who has a special interest in writing, is it was either the Victoria School of Writing had to shut down a few years ago, and I think it's created a bit of a gap there, mm-hmm. in what's available. And they used to run summer courses and some winter courses as well.
Well, as any of my students know, I'm really a strong advocate of writing, and we actually make students write quite a bit. And that might seem counterintuitive for an art course, but especially in the advanced levels, we find it really helps people think. So because a lot of our courses, or seminar courses, a component is writing, we think, well, the next thing is to have a course in writing.
Say that, you mean creating an artist statement or an artist bio?
Creating an artist statement, okay. Or just always writing. I think what happens is when you start writing about your work for a statement, or just writing your ideas down, you commit your ideas. And it's really important to make that commitment to the ideas. And I think that visual art, or probably all art, is so related to who we are as a person and who we were as a child, and that what happens is people often look outside for the answers. You know, for example, I studied visual art and I looked at all these wonderful art historical masterpieces thinking, oh, I have to paint like that. And it took me about 10 years after my undergraduate to realize that, no, I can paint from what I know and from my own experience. And I think writing we're more likely to get to that place through writing, whatever form, if it takes a form of journals or just note-taking of your thoughts, it gets people closer to making something that's really authentic.
It's the first time I've heard it like that. And I often look at artist statements and read them and read them and read them and say, I can't quite understand this artist statement. But when I hear you speak about them and why, and look at it from the artist's point of view,
right,
as opposed to who's reading it at an art show, I never thought of that explanation like that.
Yeah, so we do try and advocate clarity in writing as well, because I know sometimes artist statements are really hard to read and they're complex. And I think in part because the ideas are complicated and they haven't quite figured out how to make it clear. And it's also sometimes people don't trust in simple writing, and yet simple writing is so great, right? And so we try and talk about that.
It's the hardest to do, they say, to write
That's
simple,
right.
like
right.
Hemingway and whatnot, who wrote clear, crisp prose. You're right.
That's right. And that's why I tell students, I say, just write down what you think your work is about and not get so caught up in, you know, maybe the art jargon that sometimes disguises what the true meanings are. I mean, one of the things that I think the school does, and if you go to an open house, which we still have work up right now, if anyone would like to go and look at the work, it's open to the public. It's at 2549 Quadra. And what it is that you'll see all kinds of work, abstract work, representational work, detailed work, really simple work. And I really enjoy the fact that we allow our students to do whatever kind of work, as long as it's authentic. And I sort of kid around, as long as it's high quality. And that, I say kid around because it's a challenge sometimes to define quality in work, but I define it by a kind of authenticity of intent.
And we gave the address, just as I say, just south of the Quadra Street Village on Quadra. And you say the work is still up. Is that a holdover from the Spring Ahead Art Festival?
That's something else. We had our open house. We left all the artwork up. And then this weekend we had a festival. It was a fundraiser. And we had, it was quite an event. Anyways, the entire back of our school is now covered with graffiti by professional graffiti artists who came to the school. And they spent probably 10 hours painting the back of the school. And I was thinking that they were such a wonderful model of a work ethic because they just work nonstop. Mm-hmm. So the school looks quite transformed.
We're putting together lots of so-called opposites, artist, good business person, graffiti painter, professional graffiti painter. I'm getting a whole new appreciation here, so thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if people want to stop by the school, are there particular hours to see the work?
Nine to five, Monday to Friday.
Okay.
And occasionally we're open on the Saturdays, but for sure 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. And we have, as I mentioned, we have a gallery, so you can always come in any day just to look at what we have in the gallery.
And my guest today is Wendy Welch, the director and founder of the Vancouver Island School of Art, VISA, I guess,
that's right,
for short. I don't know if there's any trademark problems there, but that's what I always refer to it as VISA. Now, I've asked Wendy to bring in some of her favorite tunes, and she's brought in a CD here. I think we've got Bruce Springsteen teed up, do we?
That's right.
And what particular song do we know?
It's Born to Run, the acoustic version.
Here we go.
Day we sweated out on the street of a runaway American dream. At night we ride through mansions of glory and suicide machines. Sprung from cages on Highway 9, chrome wheel fuel injected iron. Stepping out over the line, baby, this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap, it's a suicide rap. I wanna get out while I'm still young. Those tramps like us, baby, we were born to run. Well, Wendy, let me in. I wanna be your friend. I wanna guard your dreams and visions. Just wrap your legs around these velvet rims. Strap your hands across my engine. And together we could break this trap. We'll run till we drop, and baby, we'll never go back. Walk with me out on the wire. Girl, I'm just a scared and lonely rider, and I gotta know how it feels. I wanna know if love is wild. I wanna know if love is real. Beyond the palace, Emmy power drones scream down the boulevard. A girl's comb her hair in rear view mirrors. The boys try to look so hard. The amusement park rises bold star. Kids are huddled on the beach in the mist. Well, I wanna die with you, Wendy, on the streets tonight, in an everlasting kiss. Well, the highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last chance power drive. Everybody's out on the run tonight, but there ain't no place left to hide. Together we could live with the sadness
I love you with all madness in my soul. Someday, baby, I don't know when we're gonna get to that place that we really wanna go. When we'll walk in the sun, feeling tramps like us. Baby, we were born to run.
Bruce Springsteen, and that was picked and brought in by my guest today, Wendy Welch. Why Bruce Springsteen?
Well, I've been a fan of Bruce Springsteen for quite a while, probably since the 80s, and I really like this acoustic version of Born to Run, because the original Born to Run was 1975, and then he did this acoustic version in 1988, and I like the idea that one song, the meaning of the song could change. The way he's singing it, it becomes a different kind of song, even though some of the sentiment is the same. I also like the song because it has my name in it. But it's just that interesting, just talking about art and how you can change things by color or, in this case, the sound of a voice. And it's, so the other thing about Bruce is that he's talking about just the everyday person trying to find their way, trying to find some kind of dream, some kind of small dream. And that's, my dad has always talked about that, you know, just you support the everyday person. And so that the school for me is that place where I accept everyone. Everyone can come in and we figure out a place for them. So I started this course called, this is just an example, called Artist Atelier, where people who might not fit in a classroom for one reason or another, either they can't pay attention to the classroom structure or they just want to do their work. So I thought, okay, we'll have a class for that kind of person. So it's really important to me. Like, I really speak of this in my heart, that I want anybody to come in the school and I'll figure out a place for them to study art.
A safe learning environment. And I think that's very important. I think a lot of artists of all kinds are sort of toiling away, but have a real anxiety about getting out there and showing their work.
That's right.
Possibly getting it critiqued in a way that they will find devastating, for
example. Well, it's surprising how anxious people are about art. Like, for example, if I teach a drawing class, a beginner's drawing course, a course for complete beginners, I'll say the first day of class, I'll say, so how many people feel a little scared? And everyone puts up their hand. And I think, wow, you know, drawing is the first gesture. It's the first thing we do as a child in terms of making a mark. And yet we're afraid. It's because, you know, we're afraid of not being able to do it well. I think some of it happens in the schooling system, like in elementary school. I mean, I hear these stories day in and day out about how someone had a teacher who told them, oh, you can't draw, or you should take something else, you can't do this, or you can't do that. I mean, I had the same experience with music, where I had a teacher told I was playing the recorder, and she said, just pretend to play because you're disturbing the other people in the class. And
just mouth the words.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And recently I had a student who is a singing teacher, and I was telling her about drawing, and I said, you know, anyone could draw. And she says, well, singing's like that. And I said, really? And so I actually started taking singing lessons, and I was shocked to discover that I can keep a tune. So all these years, I thought I was tone deaf and I couldn't ever be able to sing because of a teacher, right? So I thought it's important for me as a teacher to put myself in that kind of position of being really uncomfortable and scared, because I am pretty scared about learning to sing. But at the same time, it's very exciting to learn that you can do something you never thought you could do. And I see that kind of excitement all the time. So once I can coax someone to take a class, once I get to that point, often people get so excited that they start taking more and more courses. And it fundamentally changes people's lives. And I could say that I'm not making a sales pitch. It's just I've seen this time and time again. And it's not that they're going to be great artists. What it is it gives them a sense of fulfillment. And maybe more importantly, that idea of really being present. Because when you're doing art, you're present. And all those worries and the things that kind of nag us and keep us awake at night, they all disappear when you're doing the art. And some ways, it's the only way some people have to stop that chattering that goes on.
And I think you're right. It's almost meditative if you're doing it, and getting something out of it is, you're right. It's just, you get totally focused. And it's a calming kind
That's
of thing,
right,
as well. And then the creativity seems to come from that. But still, for the absolute beginner, it's still who's convinced for all those sorts of reasons. You know, I can draw as a stick person, for Pete's sake.
Right.
You know, how do you hold their hand and get them?
Well, I say, first of all, stick people are really great. Okay. And so, you know, there's nothing wrong with stick people, or people say they can't draw a straight line. Well, you don't need straight lines. So it's just to get them to, first of all, what you're doing as an art teacher is you're teaching people to see things differently. So I get them to look at the spaces between things. And bit by bit, it's like, you know, learning to drive. I don't drive, but I've learned to drive many times, so I know all the different steps. And when you first learn to drive, you see everything separately. Your foot on the gas pedal, the brake, you're looking in the rear view mirror, you're checking your blind spot. So I'm still thinking of those all as separate, but anybody who's listening to this would think they don't think about that. And that's the way drawing is. That's the way painting is. Once you learn all the different ways to see things. And so one of the things when I hire instructors, the first thing is that they have to be kind people. And then they have to be good artists and, you know, smart. But kindness is everything, because if you're not kind and you're the best artist in the world, you're not going to help people learn. And when I went to Concordia, it was that kind of training where the professor would start off the first class saying, only 1% of you are going to make it. And it was just very negative and really kind of negative critiques. And you'd always be left thinking, okay, this was really terrible, but what do I do now? And so at the school, we really use encouragement. So it's a really interesting challenge to make a encouraging, comforting environment, but also have high standards. And that's what we do. We make students do a lot of work, but in a nurturing atmosphere.
And I think that's a real skill, especially where even in a beginner's class, the, quote, skill level is going to be still very different between people, and they just can't resist looking over the person beside them in front of them and saying, oh, my gosh, you know. So it's a constant thing. But if you're any example of how you approach it, I think that's excellent.
Yeah.
You're listening to Wild Orphans, my guest Wendy Welch, and we're on CFUV 101.9 FM. It's just past the bottom of the half hour. I should at least tell you about the weather and a few things that are happening out there. The wind warning, bright red Environment Canada wind warning banner is still displayed up here, though I think it's dying down a bit. And tonight we're expecting cloudy periods, a 40% chance of showers early this evening, and risk of a thunder shower tonight, but still quite windy. at least up until midnight, in the 40 to 60 kilometer per hour range, a low of plus 5 tonight. Tomorrow, still cloudy with sunny periods, a 40% chance of showers in the afternoon and early in the evening. And then as the week goes by, it looks like the sun is going to be shining through more and more, this high pressure system moving in, and our highs will be up around the 14, 15, 17 range and fairly sunny. Should also tell you a couple of public service announcements for what's happening. And if you haven't heard it by now, I don't know where you've been, but Alexandra Morton is walking down Vancouver Island, literally. She started up from her home at Swine Tula in Port McNeil, and she's walking down Vancouver Island and gathering support for the Salmon Are Sacred Get Out Migration, or sorry, the Wild Salmon Are Sacred Get Out Migration fundraiser and raising the awareness. She is expected to arrive here and will arrive here in time for an event this Friday night, May the 7th, starting at 7 o'clock till 9:30 p.m. at the Mary Winspear Center out in Sydney. So join Alexandra Morton on her way. And it's free, and you can get more information by calling Wally DuTemple at 250-812-0725. That's Wally at 250-812-0725. Also, for what's happening out there is Shabam. This is an art exhibit group show at the Camosun College Visual Arts students at the Gallery Cafe, which is in the Cedar Hill Rec Center, and it runs through, it's already open, it runs through until May the 30th. The reception is May the 6th at 7 p.m. Come and meet the artists, and you can get more information by calling Diane Thorpe with the City of Saanich at 250-475-5557. And stay tuned for this.
Do you want to hear some new Canadian blues rock and support a good cause? The Society for Leukemia and Lymphoma is having a fundraiser for their Light the Night Walk, featuring Johnny and the Stormriders, who are currently on tour, performing at Prospect Lake Community Hall, located at 5258 Spartan Road, on Saturday, May 8th. Tickets are available at the door and include dinner. Contact Sandy Plews at sandicakes@hotmail.com for more info.
And I'm back with Wendy Welch, and we were talking about stick people, getting people, absolute beginners, and getting them to feel comfortable, relaxed, and yet creative and encouraged. And it sounds like that's part of the teaching philosophy, if not the central part of the teaching philosophy at the Vancouver Island School of Art. But Wendy, in addition to founding the school, is teaching. I counted it up because do you call it the spring semester?
That's right, yeah.
The spring semester is happening. You yourself are teaching five different courses.
That's right. So the spring semester starts next week. So check out our website. We've got a lot of exciting classes. So I love teaching, and I love coming up with new courses, and that's one of the exciting things about having your own school, is that you can come up with an idea and then approve it yourself, and then it gets to be a course. Whereas in university, I think it would be a little too confining for me. So one of the courses I'm teaching starting next week is called Slash, Paper Under the Knife, and it's based on an exhibition that's on right now at the Museum of Art and Design in New York. And it's all different artists who are using paper as their main medium and different kinds of paper cutting. It's really big. I went to the Venice Biennale in 2007, and I was just really amazed by the amount of artists who are just using paper. It's just a simple material. And I thought, well, this is a really great way to start art. If you've never done artwork before, why not start with a real simple material? And it really helps. I've taught it once already, and what people were attracted to is that they didn't have to draw, although I do include a little bit of drawing, but just it's so simple, right? Yes. And I think one of the attractions why a lot of contemporary artists are doing things like paper cutting is because of the simplicity of the means. It's just a material that's readily available, easy to transport, and there's perhaps a slight shift from these really monumental, metal, really kind of expensive type of work that's really challenging to ship, that needs huge studios. Mm-hmm. So paper is a way to, it's a medium I use a lot, and it's a way to make a lot of large-scale work, but in small components. So that's one of the classes I teach.
And these are evening classes primarily?
They're all mornings, afternoons, and evenings. So we switch it up. I also teach a sculpture class called Off the Wall, and it's just a really good introductory course for people who are interested in sculpture but haven't done much. So it's working on relief, things that are from the tradition of drawing and painting, but adding sculptural components to pieces that are on the wall. And one of the things I like to do when I teach is to really encourage people to use materials that are at hand. It's a rare day I go to an art supply store. I really like to use things that are available. And the piece that I had recently at Open Space in November, I did a drawing installation in one corner of the room, and it was made from thousands of envelopes. And these are envelopes that I get every day as my job as an administrator, and I would just tuck them away. It was kind of a way to get to do artwork while being an office person. And so then I did these drawings on kind of scribble drawings on each of the envelopes and cut them out and then taped them to the wall to make this kind of drawing that went on the wall. So that's just an example. So the drawing in a way became a record of my other job, because I think it's really interesting to incorporate all aspects of your life into your work.
And I'm looking at the catalog that Wendy was kind enough to bring in of her show at Open Space down there on 4th Street. And I don't know what to say about it. It's absolutely incredible. I'm looking at the centerfold, I guess, of the brochure, of the booklet, and it's a huge installation.
That's right.
And that's just colored.
It's made of red, yellow, blue, and white. And prior to that, that piece is kind of a retrospective of 10 years' work, because prior to that, when I was doing my MFA here at UVic, I was working on monochromatic colors installations, kind of what I would think of as three-dimensional abstract expressionist painting, but they would all be red or blue or white. And it was a way of kind of organizing the materials, because one of the things, if you're an artist that uses found materials, mm-hmm. you have to find ways to organize them. And one of my real strong interests is biology. I actually thought I would be a biologist. And so I was interested in that, the way biologists categorize different things. And one of the ways that, for example, plants are categorized are by color. So then I started categorizing my materials by color. And so in this piece that I had in Open Space, I just mixed up all the colors. And I make them in components, and then I brought them to the space. And I was trying to create the sense of a three-dimensional drawing. Because one of the things, I mean, we were briefly talking about writing, mm-hmm. but one of the things I really find great about the way contemporary art is today is that everything is connected, so that drawing and sculpture and painting is all sort of one. You know, things, artists don't necessarily say they're a painter mm-hmm. so much anymore, because I have friends who are painters, but they also do videos.
Yes.
And so I love drawing, but I love doing sculpture. So then I think about, because my training is in drawing and painting, whenever I do a sculpture, I always think of it as a painterly sculpture or a drawing sculpture. So that's how I ended up with that form.
But an installation like this at Open Space, off air, you were telling me it took a couple of weeks.
That's right.
To get set up. What becomes of an installation like that when a show is over?
It gets taken down and then gets remade. So it always can get reinvented. And then sometimes I sell components, so sections of it, but mm-hmm. it's always sort of being reinvented. And that's a question that students often ask, mm-hmm. you know, so what do you do with installation art? You know, how do you make money from mm-hmm. it? And one of the things I tell them is that it's more almost as a performance, and especially the way I work, because I invite members of the community and my students and different people to help me put it together. So everybody's working on putting it together, and I'm watching them how they put it together, and it's quite interesting. I give them certain parameters, but then sometimes they make their own decisions. And when I was doing the show at Open Space, one of the people helping me said, you didn't tape it in the right way. And I thought, well, that's really interesting because it's my work. But she had her own vision of how it should yes. be taped. So it's this, it's more than, let's say, a kind of finite art piece. It becomes very performative, but also community involvement. And it's one of the things, and I keep mentioning it, is this idea of demystifying art. And I mean, you probably have heard people say, or they say to me, that they don't go to art galleries because they're intimidated by art galleries. So one way for me to bring people into art galleries is actually get them to help me make a piece. And then it takes away everything, all the mystique, because they think, well, it's just like, it's work. It's just a different kind of work. It might be taping things to the wall, but it could be similar to sweeping or just a different task.
Well, the night I heard you speak a few weeks ago at Fairfield Artist Studio Tours, and we were talking about it off air, is always ask an artist, especially when you don't understand the work, or even if you don't like it, say, what are you trying to say?
That's right. I always tell students that because they're so quick. I mean, I hear this all the time when I go into art museums where people say, I don't like that, and they walk away. And I mean, I hear it. I just heard it on the weekend when some people were going around looking at the work at our open house and saying, oh, that does nothing for me. And I always say to students, just stop a moment and say, what do you think they're doing? Because they are, even if you don't like it, they are trying to do something. I mean, I don't believe that all art is of equal value. And I think some people, like the least interesting work for me is work that seems to be copying another kind of work that's already out there. Mm-hmm. So when you're asking yourself what the artist is trying to do, you're also kind of looking for this sort of authentic voice. And mm-hmm. that's like, when we're teaching, sometimes instead of talking about whether work is good or bad, I always talk about whether the work seems alive or is it not alive? Is it dead? And there's, you know, so some work could look kind of amateurish and maybe not entirely well executed, but it looks alive. So, and these are kind of intangibles, but I think the more you look at work, the more you recognize it. So instead of thinking good or bad, try it and see, like, just say to yourself, does this work look like it's alive? Like, it's just like that gesture of the person who made it. Mm-hmm. Can you feel that?
I can see why you're a good teacher. You're letting, just giving different ways of looking at things. And my wife Elaine and I try and go to the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria once a month, especially on Donation Day. And any time we've listened to one of their volunteer guides, their docents, explain the art, it helps make it come alive.
Like
the more
right.
The more you know about what is in that art, how it was made, and about the artist.
That's right.
And which is, I think, what you're saying as
well.
Yeah.
Because there's something about contemporary art in particular that people get angry about because they don't mm-hmm. understand it. I mean, the famous case of the Barnett Newman Voice of Fire, which is now worth
Ottawa.
10 times the amount the National Gallery paid for it. But anyways, that like people right away, they think, oh, the artist was just trying to pull the wool over my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I bring up that example just because it always gets brought up to me at cocktail parties. Mm-hmm. Like I'm representative of art and people will come up to me, people I don't even know, and they'll say, well, why did we have to pay so much for that mm-hmm. work of art? And I said, well, you know, we should really be proud of that. Our people who run the National Gallery saw that there was something really valuable in that. But for someone just looking at it, because they don't get it right away, mm-hmm. like we're in a kind of culture where we have to get it instantaneously. And it's like, if that was the case, like nobody would read philosophy, right? Because it takes time. You have to kind of ponder mm-hmm. what these thoughts are. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't get it right away, maybe it's because it is a little complicated, or maybe it's not. But maybe, like I notice once people relax mm-hmm. and they don't approach art with this kind of adversarial attitude, that they could actually enjoy. Like they can like the colors. So it's a stripe on a painting, but they might, once they take away some of their preconceived ideas, they might sit back and think, well, I actually like that color, and wow, it's bigger than me, and things like that.
And even how it's shown, I've seen it in the National Gallery in Ottawa, and it's, I like it.
Yeah. Well,
but don't ask me to explain why, but as you talk, then some ideas come. Okay, maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, it has presence.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk for a bit, and we've mentioned websites, but go on the Vancouver Island School of Art website. That's easy to find. Just put in those words. But you also have your own website, wendywelch.com.
That's right. Yeah. And I don't have my current work on it because I'm too busy with the school, but I will have it.
But you'll have your write-up and artist statement for, I think it's the open space Is it? It's a good artist statement.
I have my artist statement. I have previous work to Open Space, so you can kind of get a sense of the way I work.
And for registration for the courses that are starting next week, it's still time?
There's still time. We take registration up until the day of the course. Some courses are filling, but I really recommend everyone take a course because we might not necessarily make you into a great artist, but we'll definitely make your life more interesting.
Do people, for any of the courses, do you have to submit any kind of portfolio, or do you just...
We have two programs. We have a Certificate of Visual Arts, which is a one-year program, and you don't have to submit a portfolio, but we also have a three-year program, a Diploma of Fine Arts, and you do have to submit a portfolio, and the deadline to apply is August 15th. And right now we're working on a collaborative program with the Pacific Design Academy, where we're going to offer the Diploma of Visual Arts and Graphic Design. So it'll actually be given by the Pacific Design Academy, but the first year will be the visual arts at the Vancouver Island School of Art. Because one of the things that I was talking to different design graphic designers about in the community is that a lot of times people come from a graphic design program and they know how to use all the computer technology, mm-hmm. the software, but they don't have enough experience using their imagination and to really be creative. So we thought this would be a great way to combine those two mm-hmm. worlds and give students a practical use for their degree in art.
But you don't have to take the diploma. You can just take one-off courses.
You can just take one-off courses.
Such as art history. I'm looking at it here. Yeah, let's talk about some of your other artists, the other instructors.
Okay.
Just a few words. We've got about another 4.5 minutes left.
Okay. Well, John Luna is teaching a really interesting art history course called Art and Nature, and just talking about the way artists throughout history have used nature as a subject matter, including contemporary artists. So just the kind of build-up of how it's always been something that has appealed to artists. And so it's a different kind of art history course instead of just focusing on the linear time frame, just to think about how it's being used, has been used for so long. And then he's also teaching another course, which is called Illustration in Contemporary Drawing, because again, those worlds are merging, the world of illustration and comics with contemporary artists. So how to see those worlds together, and so people who might just want to learn the basics of illustration, but also see how contemporary artists are using it in their work.
And just to put that in context as well, both of those courses start next week. They run for about, it looks like 5 weeks or six weeks. And they're 3 hours once a week, if I'm reading this right. That would be your time commitment from folks that if you want to take one of those courses.
That's right. Yeah. So we also have courses that run twice a week that are 36 hours. They're a part of our regular program. We have Drawing One, which is taught by David Gifford, who I went to UVic with, and he's a really good instructor. He's also a magician, so that's pretty cool to have a drawing teacher who's also a magician. And he started the Ministry of Casual Living on Haltane.
Yes.
So, and then we have Rachel Hellner, who's teaching a design course, and people love Rachel. She's a really good instructor. So, and we have a new website. And you could see various things. We also have a Facebook page with all the images from our weekend. So you can see the graffiti artists. There's videos of the graffiti artists on our Facebook page. And the page is just Vancouver Island School of Art. And we're looking for some fans. So if you're on Facebook, please join. And then you'll get to find out what's happening at the school on a daily basis.
And again, it's on Quadra Street. Just the exact address. I've lost it here.
2549 Quadra.
2549 Quadra. And folks can just phone up, go on the website. Can you register online?
You can register online. You could phone up or you can drop by. Sometimes people, if they're unsure, if they want to take a course, they can just come in to the school. And this is a great time because until Sunday, we'll have all the work up. So if you're trying to think, well, do I want to take a drawing or painting course, to actually go and see some of the work that's done in the classes. And then in the summer, we're having a series of three-day workshops called Art Today, and there's going to be drawing workshops and painting workshops. that are taught by John Luna and myself. Yeah. And then we have a few guest instructors. I have an instructor coming up from Nanaimo, or coming down from Nanaimo, mm-hmm. to teach encaustics, which is painting with, yes. wax.
So lots happening at the Vancouver Island School of Art. I think we're almost out of time for today, because we have to make way for what's coming up next here on CFUV, and which is Hong Kong Student Radio, and followed at 3 o'clock by Loud, Fast, and Out of Control. At 4, it's Strep Throat Radio, and at 5, Gorilla Radio comes stomping in with Chris Cook. Always enjoy his show, and always lots of excellent program if you keep the dial on 101.9 FM. Wendy, any final words, anything you want to promote or plug just in the last minute remaining?
Well, thanks so much for allowing me to have a chance to talk about the school, and I really just want to encourage everyone to come, whether they want to take a course or not, but just to come to the school. John Luna has just curated an exhibition in this live room gallery, which opens Friday night, May 7th at 7:30. It's called Pedestrian Color, so that would be a really interesting show to check out. I have a piece in that show as well. That's a little bit different from my other work, but just come down. There's lots of parking and a really welcoming place.
And graffiti.
Yeah, and
legal,
graffiti.
Real legal graffiti.
That's right.
Thank you for taking the time to do that. My guest again, Wendy Welch, director of the Vancouver Island School of Art, and their spring offering of courses begins next week, and there's still lots of time to get signed up. That's it today for Wild Orphans. Be sure and tune in next week. Our format for Wild Orphans is changing, and we hope you enjoy it. But we're going to be on the air. Just come back in at 1 o'clock every Monday here at CFUV.
That's the sound of the Big Heavy, the theme song for Smoker's Cough. You'll hear lots of music just like it and more on Friday night from 10 p.m. until midnight on CFUV 101.9 FM.
Sheriff, when the man pulls that sweet sir, and snaps my poor head back. You make sure my pretty baby sitting right there on my lap. They declared me unfit to live, said into that great void my soul be hurled. He wanted to know why I did what I did. Well, sir, I guess it's just a meanness in this world.
You're currently listening to 101.9 FM in Victoria, 104.3 on cable. On the net, you can find us at cfuv.uvic.ca. Our on-air studio phone number.